Hi, my name is Allison Mead, and welcome to What She Said, an episode of the LA FBI's podcast series. The Los Angeles Female Playwrights Initiative is dedicated to encouraging and promoting the work of female playwrights. And today I'm going to be speaking with Jacqueline Goldfinger, whose play Babel will have a reading at Sacred Fools on January 27th. Jacqueline is a playwright and dramaturg. She co-founded the Foundry at Playpen and curates Page by Page. And additionally, she's an affiliated artist at New George's and the Lark Playwright Center, and a member of the Writers Labs at the Barrow Group and the Zucca Theater. Her play Bottlefly was a finalist at the 2018 International Book Awards, and her plays have been developed and produced at theaters including the National Theater in London, the Wilma Theater, Kennedy Center, La Mama, Disquiet, Florida Studio Theater, Orlando Shakespeare, Kansas City Rep, Perseverance Theater, Capital Stage Company, the Seattle Public, Manhattan Theater Works, and the New York International Fringe Festival. She's won the Yale Drama Prize, the Smith Prize, Generations Award, Brown Martins Award, Barrymore Award, and the Philadelphia Critics Award. So welcome, Jacqueline.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Well, Babel begins with a really interesting premise. So what would it be like if you had the ability to build your own baby with all the qualities and traits you wanted him or her to embody? So I wonder what originally drew you to that idea.
Well, when I was pregnant, we had some health scares with the baby, which everything is fine. I like to assure everyone everything is fine now. But we ended up having a lot of genetic testing and other testing done, and I was just amazed by the technological advances and all of the reproductive technologies, especially how much you could know about a baby in utero. So, of course, being a curious playwright and dramaturg, I did some research, started researching it, and it's really incredible. Like, designer babies are real. You now can determine, if you have enough money and want to undergo the procedures, you can now determine your baby's eye color and hair color and some other physical characteristics. And they're working on how can you manipulate non-physical characteristics, behavioral characteristics, psychological characteristics, intelligence. And so the play is based on this future world, which is coming. Like, these technologies are being developed. And because there's so little regulation around their development in the United States, we are one of the prime places where this technology is being developed, and we are the ones that will probably be tested on. So it's the play is based, yeah, I know. Hey, guinea pigs! No regulation! So many problems. But so the play is based in a future America where you can have tests on your child in utero, and the tests can determine statistically what the likelihood of, let's say, high intelligence is, or monitor if there's, like, they have this gene which could possibly result in psychotic behavior. So basically, you can get a readout on your baby before they're born. And so we've developed a system called pre-certification where your in-utero child has to meet certain benchmarks if they're going to be a part of our society. And a child is literally giving us, it's been a certification at birth that they are biologically clean. And it has taken the place, this biological certification, it's become a major class issue. And so racism and sexism and these things still exist, but they exist within this system where actually the biggest ism is biologicalism, which is were you or were you not certified at birth.
Right. So this pre-certification. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so that's what the play is around, two couples who are both trying to decide what to do with the test results and the moral and ethical questions that arise. But it's also funny.
It is funny, because I wanted to ask about the pre-certification that you mentioned. If a child receives that, as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, he or she is unlimited in terms of what might be expected during the lifetime, whereas those who don't have this are considered lacking. So in our contemporary world, it actually might be flipped, because it sometimes seems that the more antisocial you are, the qualities you have that push that, are actually more widely accepted in certain areas. So I wondered how audiences so far have reacted to that central idea.
So we've only had one reading so far. So Sacred Fools will be our second reading.
Okay.
But in the one audience that we've had a reading of it, they loved it, and it gave them something to talk about afterwards. Because we tell a complete story, so there is, you do find out what happens except in one case, and then people get to kind of choose their own adventure in terms of what they think happens in that one case. But everyone else is a complete story. And so people, I think, have enjoyed the Black Mirror-esque aspects of it, where it's a horrifying idea, but it's really interesting, and you laugh and you cry, and then you talk about it. So far it's been a lot of fun.
It seems like there's also, because it touches on the idea of inherent goodness versus the idea that goodness can be learned or might be able to be learned, it's a sort of the classic nature-nurture argument. And I don't want to reveal too much about the play, other than what you've already said, but because there are some kind of cool surprises in it that I want people to experience in person, but I wonder where you, as a playwright, stand on that. Do you think one or the other is more valuable or more maybe useful? Maybe you've even seen it in your own kids?
Yeah, I think as a mother of twins, I have a unique point of view because I get to see two people who are different grow up side by side and experience the same things. And I would argue that, for at least for my kids, what I've seen, it's about half nurture and half nature. You can do the exact same things with one twin, and it does not work with the other twin. Or they react very differently in the same situations. And so I personally feel it's probably about half nurture and half nature. And that's one of the ethical conundrums that we tackle in the play, which is that all science can do is give us probabilities. So, you know, let's say there's a certain gene or certain combination of genes that's found in 87% of serial killers. So there's a probability that that gene is a problem. And the people in the play, many of them have taken it as it's a certainty there will be a problem. And so there is a discussion about the moral and ethical quandary of probabilities in science and who believes what and where the cutoffs are for anything in terms of what you believe will happen.
Very interesting. So I know you spoke earlier about the development so far having one other reading and that this will be your second.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wondered if there was any other development before that during the writing process. Were you able to... Did you write it on your own? Did you write it with the help of a theater group or a residency, fellowship, anything like that?
I was incredibly lucky. I submitted this idea for something called the Smith Prize for Political Theater, and it won. The idea won the prize. So it won the Smith Prize in 2017, which gave me money to write it. So I got to sit down and write it. And then it also gave me a week-long residency at Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, Florida. So I had the privilege of going down to Florida after I had a draft and working with the director and actors for a week, and that was fantastic.
I like working that way, too. That's really great when you can get that deep into it. So
amazing. Yeah, I'm with you.
It's just so juicy. You can kind of get in there in ways that you can't normally. It's that wonderful time of being alone as a playwright and being able to live in that space of your mind, then readings are fine, but often, I don't know if you found this too, but the actors can be really cold, so they either they might not be showing you your play in its fullest kind of expression. So,
Absolutely. And we work in that in-between, right? Like, playwriting is not really a literature, it's a performance. There's a performance that's on the page that needs additional collaborators to actually become its full self. And so whether or not it's just me inviting friends over and plying them with wine and spaghetti and having them read something, or actually getting in a room with people, which both ways have their pluses and minuses, But either way, I agree with you. It has to be actually worked out on its feet, because that's what the art form is.
And so that's interesting. Now, so did that occur before your first reading?
I did have, so for all my plays, when I have a first draft that I'm ready to hear, I invite a bunch of people over and I make them dinner and ply them with wine. And we just sit around the living room after dinner and read it. And it just gets the words in the air, because, as I'm sure you've probably experienced as well, words in the air are different than words on the page.
Yeah.
And that's why playwriting is the trickiest form of writing, because it has to work both in the air and on the page, which is really a tightrope to walk. So I always do like a little private, but no one comes. Like, it's just friends and pasta.
I see. But it
and lots of
like
wine
also...
and hearing it, that's all.
Yeah, but it seems like you kind of did it flip too. Normally it's one tends to get readings first and then deeper development opportunities like workshops, if you're lucky. I'm completely mm-hmm. with you on that one. So this one kind of had an opposite one, where you had the private readings, a workshop, and then public readings.
It does, and I think that so much of the work, the way that I develop something, I wish I could say it was all my process and my choice, but so much of it comes down to who will fund something.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, I can feed people and ask them to read something in my living room, and that's fantastic for a one-night thing. But, like, I can't pay for a full-week workshop. Thank God the Smith Prize, which is administered through NNPN, which is a national new play network. They also sponsor the New Play Exchange online. Thank God for them, because they have this award that takes care of paying for that whole process, so you can just focus on the work.
That's marvelous. It's like, to me, that's like having about a million massages simultaneously.
Yes.
So great.
Right?
Just to kind of wrap up, I always like to ask people also what they're working on next and what we might be able to look forward to from you.
I'm so excited. So I am working on an adaptation of The Little Mermaid that's focused on body positivity.
Wonderful.
It's commissioned by the Arden Theater in Philadelphia, and we're actually doing a reading of that in February. So if anyone happens to be around Philly in February, you're welcome to join us. And it's great. It focuses on body positivity. The Little Mermaid is more of an inventor, curious, like the Kate McKinnon character in Ghostbusters.
Love it. Okay.
And the thing is that the original story it's based on, written by Hans Christian Andersen, was actually written for his gay lover, whom he could not be with, because they were gay and because his lover was married, I believe. And so a big part of the reason he wrote the story was because it was about transformation and like how he would transform himself if he could just have a chance to be with the one he loved. Which just broke my heart when I read the history of the original tale. So this one focuses on Ariel, the Little Mermaid, and body positivity, but also that it's okay to change your body if you want to. Some people feel at home in their bodies, and some people don't, and have to change the way they are to feel at home in their bodies. So it's a lot of body positivity. It's a lot of trans and non-binary positivity. We don't use those words, but it's the message of people look a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever way that you look that feels the most you, that's the right way for you to look. It's not based on what other people think you should look like.
That's marvelous. Is it aimed at kids or at adults or both?
It's both. So the Arden Theater in Philadelphia has this fantastic program. They're kind of like the Pixar of family theater in the theater community.
Okay.
So they create full two-hour shows at the top budget level with all professional actors, all professional everything. That really attract both parents and kids. So they have a hugely popular program. People come from a long way away to see their shows because they know they're going to see something that's for the whole family. So we call them the Pixar of the American Theater over at the Arden.
That's wonderful. Anything else that might be coming toward the LA area soon?
Towards the LA area. No, but my book was just published at Bottlefly, which you can buy on Amazon. It was just published by Yale Press. That was the one that was at the finalist at last year's International Book Awards. So Bottlefly by Jacqueline Goldfinger. You can pick it up on Amazon now.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today and break a leg.
Thank you so much. I hope to see everyone at Sacred Fools, and a shout out to Sacred Fools for supporting your work. They're awesome.
Yay.
And thank you, Allison.
Of course. Babbel plays at Sacred Fools for one night only on January 27th at 5 p.m. Directed by Sheila Cook and features Libby Baker, Joe Hernandez-Kolsky, Lynn Adriana, Crystal Keith, and Rowan Hall. For more information about tickets, please go to, it's actually http://tickets.sacredfools.org to reserve your seat, and admission is free. So what's wrong with that? Nothing. For more information about LAFBI's resources, activities, and opportunities, please visit www.lafbi.com.